there is a lot of promise for AI, but there is also the possibility that AI could be used to, in a way, enslave people.
Yeah.
Say, we're going to give all this work to AI, and now you just have to deal with it. And the people running it are the ones that are going to make all the money.
Yeah. And maybe try to use the other people to ensure that AI is getting the work right, no? So that would be really, really a bad thing, no?
3, 2, 1. Welcome to Knowledge Machine.
Welcome to another episode of Nerding Out with That Nerdy Catholic. I'm here with my ever co-nerd, Cesar, and we are continuing this conversation about artificial intelligence. We started recently looking at issues around ethics in artificial intelligence, and today we're going to be continuing that. But before we jump into it, I want to remind you, if you go to thatnerdycatholic.com, you can sign up for our email list to find out when we're putting out new things. If you go to thatnerdycatholic.com/merch, you can get some t-shirts or mugs, just some cool nerdy things to show the world that you are a nerd and you are a Catholic and you love the combination of the two things. If you go to thatnerdycatholic.com/support, you can help support us financially. And we are so thankful for all the support that you've given us. And we hope that you will spread the word, share this with your friends, and help spread the word that you can be a nerd and be a Catholic at the same time. So today we're looking at the question of work, and we're going to kind of go through a circuitous path, but where we want to end up is this question of what does it mean for AI to do the work that we have done ourselves? So I want to start with a quote from Pope Leo XIV. So when Pope Leo XIV first became Pope, he made his first address to the group of cardinals. And in that address, he talked about artificial intelligence as one of the reasons why he chose Pope Leo as his name. So I want to read that quote. "Sensing myself called to continue in this same path, I choose to take the name Leo XIV. There are different reasons for this, but mainly because Pope Leo XIII, in his historic encyclical Rerum Novarum, addressed the social question in the context of the first great industrial revolution. In our own day, the Church offers to everyone the treasury of her social teaching in response to another industrial revolution and to developments in the field of artificial intelligence that pose new challenges for the defense of human dignity, justice, and labor." So Pope Leo XIII was Pope in the late 19th century, around the time of the first industrial revolution. And so he came out with this encyclical, and I've read it a couple of times, Rerum Novarum. It's not a very long read, so I would recommend look it up. If you Google, I'll put a link in the show notes to the document on the Vatican website. But Pope Leo XIII was addressing questions around the Industrial Revolution, of what it means for companies, for industries to take advantage of people in their labor. And there are a lot of social questions that were coming up around this. And Pope Leo XIII wanted to make sure that all people were treated with dignity and respect.
That's a very good quote, because if we start, we can see in the Bible that during the whole history of humanity, you know, there has been people working for other people, people enslaved by other people, but God himself make some rules in the Bible, in the Exodus, on how you have to treat people and how you have to treat labor, no?
Yeah.
You know, you work for 6 days and the 7 day you rest, but not only you rest, the people that work for you have to rest, your animal has to rest, your slaves has to rest, no? So there's a sense of not only you, but everybody else. It's kind of a rule given by God on how much have to, you to work and how it is important for people to rest, no?
Right.
So that's very, very important, coming exactly from the word of God in the Bible.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And so, as I said, we're starting off looking at, especially in the Old Testament, how God talks about how we are to treat others. And I think the question of slavery in the Bible is really interesting because we often think of slavery in the Bible as looking exactly like we see slavery in the modern day, of people being kidnapped and sold into slavery. Now, this did happen in the Bible, that people were, especially during wars, people were kidnapped and sold into slavery. But it was also very common for someone to sell themselves into slavery if they have come into hard times and they did not have, you know, if they were poor, they could sell themselves into slavery. And it's easy to look at the Old Testament and say, well, look at that. God condones slavery. God thinks slavery is fine. But we need to remember that the world was a lot different back in the time of the Bible. Slavery was a very common thing. And I heard Father Mike say this one time, and I really appreciated this. I actually said it a few times, but God led the nation of Israel. If you look throughout scripture, Father Mike uses a phrase of the plus one way that God teaches us. And so God was leading the nation of Israel, and over time, slowly showed them more and more the way he wanted them to live. But he didn't just drop everything on them the first day and said, okay, this is the perfect way you should live. He saw where they were and said, okay, how can I lead them slowly towards a better and better way of living? And so he didn't say right away, just stop the slavery, which I think a lot of us would have liked him to do. But he said, well, how can I lead them closer and closer to a better way, eventually with the goal of eliminating slavery altogether? But so he said, do you have slaves? But you need to treat them well. And so this passage from Exodus 21, 26, and 27, when a man strikes the eye of his slave, male or female, and destroys it, he shall let the slave go free for the eye's sake. If he knocks out the tooth of his slave, male or female, he shall let the slave go free for the tooth's sake. So right there, you can see you can't do whatever you want. Even if someone is your slave, you can't do whatever you want with them. You can't harm them. And if you do, you have to let them go free. Yeah. 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 If you think about someone who works part-time for minimum wage and then gets fired, you might look at this passage and say, wow, they were a slave, but they were treated pretty well. If someone followed what God wanted them to do, they were treated pretty well. They had to let them go, you know, take care of them. And I love how it says, you shall furnish him liberally out of your flock. Don't just give him, you know, a small severance. Make sure that he can take care of himself, right? So it's another passage from Deuteronomy. It says, if there is among you a poor man, one of your brethren, in any of your towns within your land which the Lord your God gives you. You shall not harden your heart or shut your hand against your poor brother, but you shall open your hand to him and lend him sufficient for his need, whatever it may be. So one of the things that God keeps reminding them, like you said before, Cesar, that God keeps reminding them, you were once a slave in Egypt, and you do not want to go back to that. And you don't want to become like the Egyptians, enslaving others and treating them harshly and not caring for them. I've been listening through the Bible in a year again with Father Mike Schmidt and looking at the Exodus and the wandering through the desert as the Israelites were about to go into the Promised Land. God is always reminding them, look, I am bringing you into this new land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And there are going to be a lot of great things there. You need to care for each other with those things. You're not supposed to hoard the riches there and enslave others and not care for them. I'm sending you into this place for everyone. I think there are a lot of really great lessons for anyone that employs anyone today. If you're blessed with wealth, you need to care for the people that are working for you.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And the thing here that also you have to underline this part that says, but you shall open your hand to him and lend him sufficient for his need, whatever it may be. No? So yeah. It's important because right now that I'm here in Peru, I see that sometimes you work for a salary and you work hard and it's not enough in some companies. The salary is not enough, but because there is no other work, people just have to go and have to have multiple jobs. No?
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to discuss economy here and the complexities of that, but at least you have to ensure, and we know each one reality. No? At least we have to ensure that you are paying that person sufficient for their needs.
Yeah.
It's not saying pay that person for a luxury life, no. It's saying paying sufficient for their needs, no? So he can be covered or she can be covered.
Yeah. This will eventually lead to artificial intelligence. But before we get there, I know this is a series on AI. Before we get there, I want to look, though, at jump way ahead to the Industrial Revolution. So as we were saying, you know, the quote at the beginning from Pope Leo XIV, pointing back to Pope Leo XIII, who was Pope at the time of the first Industrial Revolution. So in the Industrial Revolution, we have a shift in how people are treated, how people are employed. Before the Industrial Revolution, most people worked for themselves. They either had their own farm or they were artisans. People produced their own things. There was slavery and people produced for others. But for someone who is free, they produced something themselves and they sold it, they bartered. But in the Industrial Revolution, we have a shift to the majority of people working for someone else. And I know for me, this idea of what it was like before the Industrial Revolution is so far away and kind of quaint feeling. We're so used to now large companies and people working for these large companies. But it was only 150 years ago that this new model started. So we have these situations where someone owns a large company and they can hire thousands of people, each person doing small tasks. And as you said, we're not really going into the economics of it. But if you go to Newport, Rhode Island, there's an area right on the ocean. There are, I think, 11 or 12 mansions. They're huge. These are thousands and thousands, like, you know, over 10,000 square feet mansions. And they're all marble and just couldn't imagine how much they would actually cost to build and to buy today. But these were all owned by all the barons in the time of the Industrial Revolution. And so, and these weren't even their homes. These were their summer homes. And so there were a handful of people that were employing all these people that were making a minimal salary. But not just the minimal salary. They were doing jobs that were just repetitive. You know, you have someone working on a factory line. They're stamping the same thing over and over again for hours every day. And then as the economy grows, we come from the Industrial Revolution into the 80s, you have a shift from this manual factory labor to information labor. But the shift goes from someone standing at a machine doing the same thing over and over again to someone sitting in a cubicle doing something over and over again.
I'm thinking a lot about those factories because whenever somebody said, yeah, the Industrial Revolution weren't that bad, really. I do see still pictures early before, from 1910 or something like that. I work in the glass container industry, you know? And you can see even kids working at the factories blowing the... So right now in modern America, you cannot picture yourself in that image, but that was like 100 years ago, a little more or less, you know, that you still can see kids working at the factories, you know? So, and that was view normal.
Yeah. Well, so, and unfortunately, that is still common in some parts of the world.
Yeah, that's true. That's still common in some parts of the world. That's right. That's right.
So now let's bring this up to the modern day. Let's start applying this to artificial intelligence now. We've looked at this image of slavery in the Old Testament and God's command about how people who you had as slaves were to be treated. So then we have the Industrial Revolution. And as we said, those same rules can be applied. If you just replace the word person with worker, you can still apply the same commands that God gives us of how to, you know, treat someone. But one of the things in the Industrial Revolution, as you said, if you're standing in a factory line and you're doing the same thing over and over again, you're not being creative.
Yeah.
And if you look at back at the book of Genesis, when God created us, he created us in his image. And one of the important things about being created in God's image is that we were created to be creative.
Yeah.
We are to create in a very similar way that God created. And so when you're in a factory doing the same thing over and over again, you're not being creative. If you're sitting in a cubicle looking at spreadsheets, writing reports every day, you're not being creative. And so there's a way that the purpose that God has for us has been kind of stripped away. But also, when you then bring it up to artificial intelligence and seeing, will artificial intelligence replace people? It's almost like it's been manipulated in such a way that that becomes inevitable. And I don't remember where I heard this. I know I heard something along the lines of this, but I remember hearing a quote that went something like this. Since the Industrial Revolution, we have treated workers more and more like machines. It shouldn't surprise us that we are now getting to the point where we can replace more and more workers with machines. If we are only doing repetitive tasks, if you look at one of the early jobs that was automated, even before AI, but AI has been used for this a lot as well. When someone goes to law school and they graduate and they get their first job in a law firm, usually what they did was they would be given, like if there's a case and one of the head lawyers is running this case and they need to find evidence of a connection between two people, then these lawyers that are just starting their career, they're given piles of sheets of paper with phone records. And they have to go through these phone records and they have to find all these connections. So this is a very boring menial task, but it was a way that they would get their foot in the door. Well, that can be automated and people can use AI to do that same job. So we have these young lawyers that now don't have a job because there are machines that are doing this. So on one hand, you're thinking, well, they can't do this job because the machine is doing it. But on the other hand, well, if they were doing the job, they're just acting like a machine anyway.
Yeah.
So it's a weird plus and minus.
As you said, the first Industrial Revolution made the people that work in the factory line kind of repetitive, taking out the creativity from their hands, no? And as we progress, think about that, no? The AI can take out the creativity from your mind, but that does mean that your mind was sucked out of creativity mm-hmm. when you were doing those jobs.
No? Yeah.
So the other thing is that even if you are using AI, for example, I think I said this before in another episode, but if you are using like Copilot and I want to be creative and I draw a house, which is you put some sticks there, put together a triangle and a square, and then you say Copilot, made from this, made a beautiful house. No? And Copilot, wow, make it a beautiful house. So it's taking the effort from you to be creative. And in that sense, it's enslaving your creativity from in your mind. You are taking out the fact that you can create if you use the AI to generate your image for you instead of you trying to do it. It might not be perfect the first time if you do it, but if you practice a little more, it right. might be nice.
You know? Right. As you said before as well, that I've struggled with this, the question of using AI to do something creative.
Yeah.
Because on one hand, you want a creative person to do it. But yeah. let's say the example we've used before is what we're doing. If we need to work on the description of a video and we want it to sound really good, we're not amazing writers, but we can't hire someone. We don't have yeah. the funds yet to be able to hire someone to say, hey, can you make the perfect poster or yeah. or write a really good description? So that is something that we have used AI for. Ideally, I would love to get to the point where we could have someone that is creative do that. But we can use it as a tool.
Yes.
But you have to be mindful that you're not just giving everything over to it and say, you know, well, it can do it now. I'm just going to sit back. I'm not even going to think about it. There's a great quote that I read. Frank Herbert, he wrote all of the Dune books, and I've only read the first one. I need to read more of them. But Frank Herbert said, once men turned their thinking over to machines in the hope that this would set them free, but that only permitted other men with machines to enslave them. And that's such a powerful quote.
Yes.
It goes to what we've talked about before, but you know, you need to think about when you're using AI, who are the people behind the AI? The AI is not it's not a person out there that you're interacting just with the AI. You're actually interacting with the company that is behind the AI.
That's correct. Yeah, and that was one of the topics of our previous video, no? Who's controlling the AI? And yeah. that's a very important reminder that you have to be in control of AI, even at work, no? People who use AI in their jobs can be exploited by their bosses in many other ways, no? Because AI is also not only trying to picture things to do something or taking out your creativity, it can be also kind of stolen. That we will go that in another video, but
yeah.
But you have always take that into your mind, no?
Yeah. Another interesting thing, I just read an article in the Wall Street Journal. There's this woman, her name is Aruna Raghunathan. She is an associate professor at the University of California, Berkeley Haas School of Business. She ran an 8-month study on how generative AI is shaping work habits at a tech company with about 200 employees. So in this article, she is quoted saying, people often end up doing more work, not less, because AI makes additional tasks feel easy and accessible, creating a sense of momentum. The initial findings of the study were published in a recent Harvard Business Review article. Such shifts in behavior may boost productivity, but they should also be a warning sign to employers, she says. Over time, this can lead to cognitive overload, burnout, poorer decision-making, and declining work quality, even if workers appear more productive in the short run. That's really interesting. You know, it can be easy using AI to just give it more and more of your work.
Yeah.
But then you're working harder and you're working less at the same time because you're just sitting there. Your job is just feeding prompts into the AI.
And the other thing is that because you can actually generate more ideas or more work. The thing that makes generate more things, you have to execute it and complete it. So that's when the more work comes. And
yeah.
And like you said, burnout can happen. No. It's
well, and as we talked about before, you can't use AI. AI is not at the point where you can just give it a prompt and get something back and say, all right, this is great. I think that people are doing that too often.
Yeah.
Without even, as you said, we've used AI. We use Oyama for writing our descriptions for our videos.
Yes.
But the process that we do is, you know, I take the transcript from a video that we recorded, feed that into Oyama and say, can I have a description for a video with this transcript? It spits out a paragraph or two, you know, 10, 15 sentences. I have to read it then and say, yes. Okay, how does this sound? Does this sound like it's in our voice? Is this actually correct, what it's saying? And so you can take what AI spits out and then use that, tweak it, edit it, and then put it out.
That's right.
It's a tool, as we've said, it's a tool to use to help in a process. It's yes. not a replacement for what you can do.
Definitely not a replacement. Definitely not a replacement. And we have to remember the case of Microsoft that laid off a lot of people. That was late 2024, I think. And then has to hire up again and say, you know, we are going to replace AI to do the coding. And lately they have a lot of bugs and to redo some things. And they have to start rehiring people because AI definitely cannot replace a person. Definitely.
No. If you're having AI write code, especially, you know, if it's more complicated code, you need someone that can understand the code to make sure it's doing what it's supposed to be doing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So I want to look at another quote now. So in 2024, Pope Francis addressed the G7 in a session on artificial intelligence, and he said, "We cannot doubt that the advent of artificial intelligence represents a true cognitive industrial revolution, which will contribute to the creation of a new social system characterized by complex epochal transformations. For example, artificial intelligence could enable a democratization of access to knowledge, the exponential advancement of scientific research, and the possibility of giving demanding and arduous work to machines. Yet at the same time, it could bring with it a greater injustice between advanced and developing nations or between dominant and oppressed social classes, raising the dangerous possibility that a, quote, throwaway culture be preferred to a, quote, culture of encounter." This is what we've been saying, that there is a lot of promise for AI, but there is also the possibility that AI could be used to, in a way, enslave people.
Yeah.
Say, we're going to give all this work to AI, and now you just have to deal with it. And the people running it are the ones that are going to make all the money.
Yeah. And maybe try to use the other people to ensure that AI is getting the work right, no? So that would be really, really a bad thing, no? One of the things that we have to very well remember that, especially when we talk about a workplace, no, we have to remember always that people is the one that are running in your workplace, no, not machines. No. The machines are part of the capital. The people is the ones who are executing the things, no, and underlining people, going back to Exodus, no, it's people that has to be treated well, that has to be treated very fair, no,
yeah.
And it is true that of the way of AI works, we cannot know exactly how is it working, but we can know how it was training and who was behind it. So you think you are talking to AI as talking to a person, but no, it's just a machine trained by somebody. No? And the thing that some people say, no, I can't replace these three workers with AI, it's really misleading, no?
Yeah.
It's really, really misleading and doing injustice to the people.
Yeah. And once you replace people with AI, you know, people talk about the singularity when AI will get to the point where it's as smart and then become smarter than people. But one of my big doubts, and I think a lot of people have this doubt, and we've talked about this before, can AI be creative? Can AI create something new? And everything that we've seen, AI, it takes whatever it's been trained on, and then it takes your prompts, and then using what it's been trained on, it spits out something. It gives you something based on your prompt and what it's been trained on. Can AI ever get to the point? Personally, I think no. But can AI ever get to the point where it says, I've been trained on all this. Oh, I see some patterns here. Well, wait a second. What if I do something new? You know, you think about music. AI can write music based on music it's been trained on.
Yes.
Can AI create a new musical instrument? Can AI do something in our series on math and our series on science? The history of science and the history of math, there are people at certain moments that have these epiphanies. It's like, wait a second, what if the world were like this? You could do the same thing with music or art. You know, you look at the history of art. We had a long time where art was just representative. And you know, you look at Egyptian art and it's flat. And you have people looking to the side and it's really like two-dimensional images of people. At some point, like, okay, well, what if we made our paintings 3D? What if we put perspective, 3D perspective, on a two-dimensional canvas? And then you have the Impressionists, you have the modern art, and there are moments where there are leaps because someone said, well, what if I did something new? What if I did something different?
Yeah.
I don't think AI will ever get to that point.
Yeah. Without a soul, AI just can repeat what it has in their database or that what has, as you well said, has been training on, no?
Yeah.
And that is the thing that we have to remember when we try to replace AI in our workplace. No, it can be a great tool, but just a great tool, not something that can create, even when companies that are selling AI, they say that AI can create, no? Which is not true.
I think a good word for it is it can regurgitate. But it can't create.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and thinking about creating an image, I want to do a short talking about one of the shirts that we have on our store because I used AI to help create this image. I fed in one image and some prompts to create something else. And I think it looks cool. But I was talking to my wife about this, who's an artist. And the image that I used that I fed into it, it was a watercolor painting, a few hundred years old. So it's in the public domain. But you have the one situation where, okay, I'm using AI, I'm feeding in this one image with some prompts, and I'm getting something back. Because AI, as we said, is just regurgitating based on what it's been trained on and what you're feeding it and your prompts and you're giving it, it's giving you something. But if I'm working with someone, if I'm working with an artist, and I say, here's this painting, I want a different, something that looks like this, and I say, I would love for it to look like an oil painting. And, you know, I tell that person what I'm thinking. That person can come back and say, oh, that's really interesting. You said you want these colors. What if we try these colors? Or what if we try adding this element? When you're working with a person, you have a back and forth that is different than when you're using AI.
Yeah. Your back and forth is meaningful in the way that there are two souls exchanging, you know? While with AI, it's one machine and you. One computer and you. So it's really different. It's really different. Yeah. I want to read this quote from Pope Francis. It's another address in the G7 session. The significance of this complex transformation is clearly linked to the rapid technological development of artificial intelligence itself. It is precisely this powerful technological progress that makes artificial intelligence at the same time an exciting and fearsome tool, and demands a reflection that is up to the challenge it presents. In this regard, perhaps, we could start from the observation that artificial intelligence is above all else a tool. It goes without saying that the benefits or harm it will bring depends on its use. This is surely the case, for it has been the way for every tool fashioned by human beings since the dawn of time. No?
Yeah.
So I like this quote because Pope Francis get it. Yeah. AI is a tool. It's a tool. It's not another person. It's not the replacement of the person. It's a tool that you can use for your work. No?
Yeah. In another place in that same address, he says, our ability to fashion tools in a quantity and complexity that is unparalleled among living things speaks of a techno-human condition. Human beings have always maintained a relationship with the environment mediated by the tools they gradually produced. It is not possible to separate the history of men and women and of civilization from the history of these tools. Some have wanted to read into this a kind of shortcoming, a deficit within human beings, as if because of this deficiency, they were forced to create technology. A careful and objective view actually shows us the opposite. We experience a state of outwardness with respect to our biological being. We are beings inclined toward what lies outside of us. Indeed, we are radically open to the beyond. Our openness to the others and to God originates from this reality, as does the creative potential of our intelligence with regard to culture and beauty. Ultimately, our technical capacity also stems from this fact. Technology, then, is a sign of our orientation towards the future. We create because, as we said at the beginning of the episode, we create because we were created in the image of God. And because God created us, we were made to create. So you and I both had these experiences, and I know everyone has had these experiences in one way or another, where they have been working on a problem. They're like, well, I'm having a hard time with this. What if I actually create a tool to solve this problem? Or what if I take this tool that was made for something else? What if I use it for this other purpose that it wasn't meant for, but it works? That moment, I love those moments of creative problem solving, of either creating a new tool or using a tool it wasn't meant for this task, but it works. So this creation of technology, it allows us to go further than we thought we could, right?
Yes. You know, the tools and AI being one of, is an extension of what human can do with nature, you know, which is great because the more tools we develop, the more we are capable of using nature in a more refined way. You know? We have to remember that the tool never replaces a human. The tool is the expression of a creative human. So the more complex the tool, the meaning the more powerful that the humans can be in order to create that tool.
No? Yeah.
But it's not, it's never, never going to replace the human being.
Yeah, yeah. In a future episode, we're going to be looking at the use of AI, specifically in the areas of art and music. And at some point, we're going to have on an artist and a musician to talk about their thoughts on the process. But if you look at pop music, I think pop music is something, and I think we said this before, pop music is something that AI can do very easily. But I'd say most people look at pop music and it's like, oh, okay, it's fun. It's great. It's not really creative. It's just, you know, it's the lowest common denominator of music.
Yeah.
And I think that's a possible future with AI. If people start using AI more and more to just say, you know what, give me something. And not using it as a tool, but just saying, but using it as a replacement for their own thought process.
Yeah.
We're just going to end up in a world with pop music type, you know, that kind of level of output.
Level of thinking.
It's just going to become bland and not creative.
Yeah, that's a real danger. And this episode, this is the purpose of this episode, to bring awareness of, you know, there's AI, but please don't stop using your creativity.
Yeah. We want our kids to grow up in a future where there's still a lot of new things happening. There's still a lot of creativity. Well, Cesar, thank you for this conversation, and thank you all for joining us today. We are continuing this discussion on ethics and artificial intelligence in this greater conversation on artificial intelligence. Any thoughts that you've had on this episode? Any questions? If there's anything you would love for us to cover looking at AI, and especially right now, AI and ethics, head over to thatnerdycatholic.com/AI. That's where you can find the current playlist of all the episodes that we're doing in this series. And there's a form on the bottom of that page. You can fill out any questions, thoughts, share those with us, and we will address them in future episodes. If you go to thatnerdycatholic.com, you can sign up for our email list to get updates when we put new things out, any new things that are happening in the Nerdy Catholic universe. If you go to thatnerdycatholic.com/merch, you can get some cool t-shirts, mugs, or other things. Buying anything off of that part of the website, that really helps support our mission financially. If you want to support us directly, you can go to thatnerdycatholic.com/support. Please keep us in your prayers, but we hope you come back to join us for the next conversation. Thanks, and God bless.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
System shut down.